Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score! Mully and Hall.
Fantastic, fantastic show.
Chicago Sports Talk for your morning.
Oh, man, I really wanted to talk to him.
Appreciate the love, big homie.
I don't want to complain too much about the White Sox because they're over 500 and they've been okay and they've had different moments where you thought they were ready to break through. And just the injuries have been so deflating. And to see them come back, you know, when you lose Louis Robert and you come back the next day and you win 9-0 and you're like, oh, they know, they're ready to go, they understand how important it is.
Yeah.
And then you come back and you lose a 10 inning game, which is what they do. They get to the 10th inning and they lose. And then you have this ridiculous turn of events.
If you knew that Abreu was available to be the runner there, would you have gone to him instead of Hendricks?
If I'd known that, I didn't know that. Check the rule.
And all that went on with that, the Reds score one run. That's a great offense, and they score one run in two games, and they split. And here you go. Now you got to get into Kansas City and put these guys in their place, and it's important to do it.
In the air, Hamilton. And the White Sox have swept the Royals.
This is a starting pitching team now, the White Sox are. Yes, the power has been hurt with injuries, but the Sox starting pitching has been just pristine. This time through the rotation, one earned run allowed. Awesome stuff.
Mike Mulligan and David Hall taking you up to 9 o'clock on 670 The Score.
Okay, let's go.
Mully at Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. It is a wondrous Monday. Already the 10th of May. We're making a dent in May in the fine city of Chicago. And David is off today and the great Tom Thayer. Tom, I am humiliated in your presence. You are just one of God's great men. And I appreciate you getting up and coming in. And God bless you, sir. Mr. Thomas, bless you.
It's nice. I know I can't fill the shoes of David Howe, but it's nice to be here nevertheless. And the calendar never stops. So, yeah, it's May 10th. Let's roll on, see what's going to happen in the next week or so, because there's still a lot of things happening. But there's a lot of things that happened over the weekend.
It was a good weekend. I would say top to bottom, a lot of fun on the weekend. Baseball fun in the fine city of Chicago. You got the White Sox sweeping the Royals, and you got the Cubs taking 2 or 3 from the Pirates. The Pirates are kind of a boogeyman team. They've been that way for the Cubs this year. I really wanted the sweep. I thought it would be great to get the two sides of town with a sweep. Unfortunately, the Cubs, they had a hell of a comeback, but they could not finish it, and that is a pity. But at least we learned that the manager has found new love. So word breaking late yesterday or maybe early yesterday, that Rossi, Grandpa Rossi, is dating a Tori DeVito from Chicago Med. It's great to have series in town because you can fall in love with people. It's beautiful.
I have people fall in love with you when you're on the TV every day and you're on the radio every day
yourself.
And you're part of the Cubs. You know, one thing about Pittsburgh, though, it seems weird because, you know, Anderson, the pitcher and stuff, and they have a couple guys that are doing well. Then they start talking about they're doing well on a crappy team, so now are they, you know, affordable? Are they tradable? And so it would always be a weird dynamic if you were on a bad football or a bad baseball team and you were doing well, and then they just talked about your trade value the whole time. I don't know how I would take it going into the clubhouse every day. You know, you want to do good, of course, but then they just talk about your value.
Yeah, that you're talking about Chris Bryant here because he's having kind of an MVP season. He has started at five different positions. So he started a game at first base. He started in all three outfield positions. And, of course, less than half the games now at third base. Pretty extraordinary the way he can move around the field and how versatile he is and how he can help you, especially when he's fixed his swing and his bat is hot. And it's a wonderful thing to watch.
He's played first base also. And I'm curious because, you know, when you're a football player, you wear all your equipment. And once you leave the locker room, you go to the bench and you have it. So does Chris Bryant, does he bring this is a serious question because I don't know. Does he bring a couple different gloves with him? One for the outfield, one for third base, one for first base.
Yes, and you'll have a different glove for first base than third base. I guess he's got an outfield glove. I haven't seen that reported. I doubt you could probably use your third base glove in the outfield if you wanted to, right? But who was the guy, Jeff Blum with the White Sox, when he came to town, he literally brought a bunch of different gloves with him. Like he had, because he played so many different positions, he had different gloves.
Like when the center fielder got hurt yesterday, then Chris Bryant, he goes over, takes over center field. They bring in the replacement. Mm-hmm. They put him out in right field. He's such a versatile guy, man. And, you know, I like his approach. I like his attitude. I like the way he interacts with the umpire and the catcher and whomever they're playing and stuff. So I'm really impressed by the type of season that Chris Bryant is having this year.
Are you impressed by the White Sox? The White Sox have there've been rumors, I shouldn't say that. There have been suggestions that they should trade for Chris Bryant because he's an MVP candidate and he could be available at the trade deadline, and certainly they could use an outfielder. Their starting outfield at one point was Danny Mendick, Andrew Vaughn, and Leury Garcia. Right. Like, you just would never have expected that before the year started. So you see that happen on Saturday, and they score eight runs to open that game, and it's just a question of what they're going to win by. A great sweep of the Royals, and Sunday it was 9-3, and Lucas Giolito joined the rest of the pitching staff with a good enough outing, and that's good to see.
The Sox are kind of amazing because you think of a pitching staff that's kind of holding together a team because they lost their biggest bats. And then you look at on the north side where their offense is kind of holding together the pitching staff over there. It's opposite end of the spectrum. And, you know, opposite ends of the spectrum. And, you know, has a guy that's kind of having an MVP type of season like Chris Bryant on one of the two teams been traded to the other team? Or
that's not going to happen.
Is there good blood, bad blood here?
I just don't think it's going to happen. I think that it's the cost would be prohibitive, in my opinion, for a rental player, because as a Scott Boras client, it's hard to imagine him getting a long-term deal. So you just get the guy for it's not even the second half of the season. It's kind of the back end of the season. I think he'd help immensely. I think it'd be a great addition, but I just think what you'd have to give up to get him for that period of time, you'd never be able to sign him long-term.
I know the Cubs don't need him. How about Abreu for Chris Bryant, and because you got the versatility of Chris Bryant,
No. I think when you're talking about a trade like that, if it were to ever occur, you wouldn't want to give up anybody. You would do it to win the World Series, so you wouldn't want to give up anybody on your roster,
right?
And therefore, you know, you need help in the outfield. You don't need any help at first base. And
I'm just trying to throw a name out there, I didn't know if Chris Bryant was exclusively would go to the Sox. Only to play the outfield,
probably, right? Just given the injuries with
Roberts,
and, Aloy, and yeah, Aloy. Robert out, right? I mean, I'm not sure that that's even in the cards in any way. But it's been written and it's been talked about, and we've had discussions about it. I just don't think, especially if he keeps playing as well as he's playing, there are other teams that probably would be willing to give up a lot more with the idea of signing him long term. You know, the Mets have talked about him for a long time. That was one of the names thrown around in the offseason. You look at a team like Washington with Mike Rizzo, the GM, really a fan of Chris Bryant. You know, the Yankees are in any conversation. I think the Dodgers would be a great landing spot for him. It's just teams with massive amounts of money.
What's wrong with the Dodgers?
I don't know. Yeah, if they're in it, I'm not sure where they're at. I think Dave Roberts was on a push to get himself fired, it seemed like, the manager. I've no idea what's wrong with them. They are the defending world champions, and obviously coming here and getting swept added to their problems and helped the Cubs quite a bit. So I don't know exactly what's wrong with them, but they probably miss Jock Peterson more than anything else. I made that up. It's not true.
Right.
It's pitching issues with them. And the White Sox, again, that starting rotation is unbelievable. The way they've gone through that series, Carlos Rodon, you think about since we were off, okay? Carlos Rodon is a 3-0 winner on Friday. He was fantastic again. That guy's ERA is just unbelievable through five starts. He has a 0.58 ERA. It's unbelievable. He's like the best pitcher in baseball. If you break down the numbers, another 6 innings, 5 hits, no runs, no walks, 8 strikeouts, 65 of the 92 pitches were strikes, 14 of them swinging strikes. I mean, he was just phenomenal. And then you come back and you score 8 runs before the game starts on Saturday, and you got Lance Lynn holding on, and then you come back with Giolito. So just the last run through the rotation has been spectacular. And the road trip itself, you know, you allowed one run, I guess 2 runs total in regulation. You allowed one in the 10th inning, and that cost you a game. Other than that, you know, you're near perfect with your pitching.
Right. What's up with Kopech? I mean, what is his role going to be eventually on this team? Is he going to grow? You know, it's something, because you think of Rodon competing for that 5th starting position. Mm-hmm. Who is he competing against? And when you look at Kopech, is he going to be able to develop that mental attitude where he's going to be that starter and he's going to be able to give you, you know, 5.5 or 5 to 6 powerful innings?
Well, he's shown that he can, but I think, Tom, the problem with Kopech, the problem in baseball is, you know, you only had a 60 game season a year ago.
Right.
So you're trying to figure out how you're stretching guys out and how they're going to pitch for you. Kopech, due to the injury and the opt-out, he has not pitched in 2 years. So the idea that you could put him in a rotation and get, you know, 5 or 6 innings out of him for 30 starts, it's not going to happen. You know, you figure a guy like that, you know, has probably 70 innings in that arm, and that's pushing it, 50 to 70 innings. So you want to use him in the way they're using him, and then if he's continuing to play like that, maybe he's this secret weapon at the end of the year. But the way it looks, you don't need him. You know, because Dylan Cease had been the worst of starter because Rodon's been so good. And then all of a sudden, Dylan Cease, the last couple turns, has been phenomenal and has been consistently good. So you'd have to say, and this is a bizarre comment, that Lucas Giolito is probably – he's the ace of the staff. He's probably the least accomplished in this year. He's just struggled a couple go-rounds, and – nobody else really has. That rotation's been phenomenal. So by the time you get to the playoffs, and, you know, again, don't let me curse the White Sox with the baseball gods, but by the time you get there, you should have a pretty damn good rotation going anyway.
You know, when you look at those group of pitchers from the White Sox, I'm interested if Kopech fits in with those guys, because you have a lot of established, long-bearded veterans mm-hmm. that have been around, who have gone through Giolito, the extreme downs to the extreme ups, and what Rodon has faced throughout his career. Are those guys, are like when they're sitting around a table and everybody's eating together, like the whole offensive line eats together, the defensive line hang together, is he part of that? Is he been embraced by those guys yet? Or do they feel he's being coddled too much on the outside of the organization, like these guys have not been?
You know, it's a good question because I think that when you're talking about veterans like Lance Lynn and Dallas Keuchel, they're coming from someplace else, right? They're coming in here. They've had careers already. Those are guys on the back end. And Lynn is a one-year player, basically. You gave up Dane Dunning for a guy that could eat a ton of innings and be a real kind of masterful pitcher for you. I don't know. Like I remember in 2005, I did some backup baseball work just because I wanted to go in the locker room. So I was doing sidebars and different stories for a couple weeks. Even though I was covering football in the off season, I volunteered to work. We were short people, so I would go in there and just look at the locker room, like follow the locker room. You know, there's a great line, William Kennedy, I think it's Billy Phelan's Greatest Game, and there it opens where they're driving through a cemetery, and he said the guy was working at the cemetery, and there he just the comment is, in death, much more so than in life, people settle down in neighborhoods, and that's what it felt like in that 2005 Sox locker room. Here are the Cuban players. You got a couple of Japanese players. You got the guys that like to hunt over here. You got the, you know, people kind of segregate themselves in a locker room just naturally based on common experience. So it's rare that you see a lot of intermingling in locker rooms. Now, I don't know, you know, you described it very well with positions in football. I don't know who's hanging out with who, but there are a lot of young pitchers and there are a lot of young bullpen arms, and he's in the bullpen. So he may be hanging out with those guys, the guys that are roughly the same age that he knows from coming up. But I don't have any inside knowledge as to how the locker room kind of separates itself. It's an interesting question. I would imagine that you have, you know, the Spanish-speaking players, the guys that don't speak much Spanish. I remember during one of the games, Rodon said that he talked to Abreu. Abreu had made a play or something, and he's like, yeah, I was talking to him. He's bilingual, you know, so I think that helps immensely.
It helps that La Russa is too. But, yes. You know, you look at the age gap between La Russa and Kopech. I mean, it's to the extreme.
Oh, my God.
Where they have to have nothing in common. And the learning value to Kopech has to be, you know, from the other guys that he's pitching with.
The pitching coach is Ethan Katz. So, I would imagine that that's the guy that he's developed a relationship with. I don't know how much you need a relationship with the manager.
Well, I mean, when you talk about the pitching decision last week, and you don't know between the pitching coach, Tony La Russa, who is evaluating the pitcher on
That's
the
true.
Mound to fill out the exhaustion or where they're at mentally during the course of that game.
When they sent Giolito out for a seventh inning and everybody could kind of read that he was exhausted except maybe Tony. And you don't know, you know, again, Ethan Katz is like a different generation than Tony. I mean, Tony's twice his age, I believe. So you don't know how intimidated he is trying to talk to La Russa. And you don't know the relationships with La Russa and his staff. It seems like the staff's okay, right? He got a nice big staff, but are they taking care of him? You know, is he getting the information? I heard somebody was on the air, who was it, talking about the idea that the blame, maybe it was Bruce, the idea was not that Tony La Russa was necessarily wrong, but that the organization didn't have the information and get it to him. Like, you know, is he the guy that's supposed to read the rule book, or is that Ernie Adams? And why don't you have an Ernie Adams?
Yeah,
he's available now, Tony.
I heard that. I heard Bruce talking about that. But, you know, who brought Ethan Katz aboard? Was it a part of Tony's hire, or did the organization – You know,
it's a good question.
So, I mean, if Tony brought him aboard, then they have to have a relationship that's pretty darn close, that the pitching coach should feel that he has the ability to say anything to Tony during the course of, you know, what he's thinking about the pitcher specifically during the course of any game.
You would hope. I mean, you would hope they all have these relationships. All right, we got to get to the 5-5. Bulls with had fans back on Friday, played inspired, knocked off the Celtics. The Celtics can't handle their length. And Sunday at the Pistons, the Bulls 108-96. So they're winning. I don't know if it's too little, too late. They are going to have to figure out a way to catch the Pacers. They're 2.5 games behind, and they don't have enough games left, really. But what are you going to do? And the Blackhawks also had fans, and they They had a 4-2 win over the Stars. They wrap up the season tonight with the same Stars. The Kentucky Derby, we got to get into that. That was bizarre. We'll talk about all of it. We got the 5 at 5 next. He's the great Tom Thayer. You're listening to Mullion on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
It's 5 at 5
with Mullion Hall,
where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767 or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mullion Hall starts now.
Where are you with Kyle Hendricks after another rough first inning? Are you buying he was foiled by soft contact and seeing eye singles after surrendering 4 hits with an exit velocity under 75 miles per hour? Bad outing or bad luck?
Yeah, it was a bad luck outing. I don't know how bad the outing itself was, but the fact of the matter is that when you're a contact pitcher, you're gonna create contact. And unfortunately, it wasn't at people. And you need the contact to be kind of at people. I mean, 4 hits under 75 miles an hour, that speaks volumes. I mean, that's balls just kind of falling in on you. And again, you know, when you talk about power pitching, the idea is you got to get outs, and you get your outs by striking people out so the ball isn't in play. And the Cubs have a great defense, and the thinking is that with contact pitching, the defense is going to play better, but you can't control where the ball goes. And that's a huge problem. It wasn't like he got hammered, and we've seen that happen before. It was just this – it was kind of this soft contact, these hits that fell in that really doomed him in that game. And it's unfortunate, I think, because you really need him to be better. You need him to kind of be the guy that you like. So bad luck outing. No other way of saying it. And he's had kind of a rough year, man. I mean, it's kind of sad. And they, my God, do they need him to be better?
Yeah, you know, considered the ace of the staff, I guess. So, you know, 16 runs allowed in the first inning this year by Hendricks is kind of tough. And they said yesterday in the broadcast, the first time in 4 years that he's allowed 3 straight base runners. And, you know, one thing, just being a fan of baseball, I don't know the rules and, the strategy and everything. This whole, you know, exit velocity stat that they bring up every game, it kind of, I get tired of it, because at the start of the game, you know, I was listening to Coom and Pat talk, and they, you know, they have that wind direction graph they show now at the game. That concerned me more against Hendricks than any other, the exit velocity baloney, because here I'm thinking is these guys aren't going to be trying to hit home runs, because Coom was saying there's only one direction you could hit a home run yesterday, and that's right in the face of the scoreboard. And they're not talented enough to put it within a 50-foot space and try. So these guys are not taking home run swings. They're taking base hitting swings. And so, you know, you think of, you know, the challenges of it and, you know, with the launch angle, exit velocity and all that. I think it goes out the window when you have that wind off the lake that's coming in against a player like Hendricks, because he's not going to, you know, throw strikes by at 98 miles an hour in the first inning. You know, he's going to feel the plate and feel, you know, his comfort zone at that time. But I am concerned about it, because he's the type of guy that he's not have that big brawny approach. He has that real calming influence to the Cubs, and I just don't see that out of him right now. It's more of the team taking advantage of what he's offering them, and, you know, he's not getting pitches by them.
What we saw in that game yesterday was even more disappointing, because Kyle Hendricks had his best start of the season Tuesday against the Dodgers, and you wanted to see him build off of that, and unfortunately it just broke bad for him. Yeah, I'm buying that. Yes, it was soft contact that foiled him and did him in. That's what you saw in that game. You know, Mully, you said it, you can't control where the ball's going when it's a soft contact type of hitting approach from a team. And unfortunately, the Cubs didn't, you know, David Ross even said it after the game, Cubs didn't play their cleanest defense behind Hendricks yesterday. So it was just a whole confluence of the, you know, a whole stack of things that worked against Kyle Hendricks yesterday. And you just hate to see it from a guy who's been so good all of these years for the Cubs. You hate to see him struggle the way he is now. And hopefully next time out, he'll be able to get out of a first inning cleanly. You'd love to see that happen just once this season.
Let me ask you a question.
Do the White Sox have the best starting rotation in baseball, or are they just in the midst of a good stretch of their starters? If they are starting the playoffs tomorrow, who would you want on the bump? Is it a different answer to the same question before the season started?
I think it is. You know, when you look at what Rodon has been able to do, even though Cleveland, it was no hit by, you know, twice in the same early portion of the season, you think of what he did on that outing. I do think they have – I think that they've come to grips with the realization that they have to be the best staff in Major League Baseball because they lost two of the biggest players on their team and what provide those guys with runs. So that now they know they have to go out there and be stingy. So I think they've accepted a lot of responsibility. And we didn't know that at the beginning of the season because everybody – wanted to talk about was Eloy and Roberts and what they were going to do throughout the course of the year, and they were kind of hopeful that the pitching staff would come around. Well, the pitching staff is around. The other guys that are getting in position opportunities to go out there and play, they're doing a great job. But to me, it's the how well that the pitching staff is keeping it together and keeping these guys in each game and giving them the opportunity to get out in front early where they can, you know, throw the type of pitches or, you know, kind of have the pitching staff come in the game how the coach sees it best.
You know, I thought when the season started that Lucas Giolito was the ace of the staff. And I thought that he was the guy that I wanted to have the ball on opening day and every start to a playoff series as well. I just thought, you know, Giolito had really reached a different level. I think when the season started, we knew Giolito, Keuchel, and Lance Lynn, 1-2-3. I unfortunately was hoping Ronaldo Lopez could win the fifth starter spot because I felt like Carlos Rodon, you know, they didn't DFA him, but they let him go. He could have signed anywhere. And they doubled back, and what's he making, $5 million? Something like that, ridiculous, considering what he's managed to do. So I've watched his career, and he's been hurt too often, and it's hard to have a ton of confidence in him. And as far as Dylan Cease was concerned, being honest about it, you know, you feel like Dylan Cease is a guy that just lacked consistency. You know, you'd see him be very good, and then he'd be pretty bad, and then he'd be pretty good again, but he could never be a straight line. And I think that was a huge concern with him. And I think that what's extraordinary to me is the fifth starter right now might be the first starter. The guy you opened the season with, Carlos Rodon, in the last spot is probably the guy, if the playoffs started today, that I would want on the bump. I mean, he's been fantastic. It's just been remarkable to watch. Everything he's doing is working, right? And his velocity is going up as games go on, and he's got, you know, that slider. It's just working like crazy. He's masterful right now. He's pitching better than I've ever seen him pitch in his career. He's a different player than he was when the season started, or at least the way that I thought about him when the season started. And if you remember, there was some like footwork stuff they were working on. There were things they were going to do, and you're just kind of like, oh God. Good luck with that. You know, you saw something. Oh, yeah, we're going to work on his footwork. Good luck with that. That's never going to work. I really had zero faith in that plan working. And I thought to myself, maybe 50 innings before the injury bug bites him. Like, I had very little faith. And the guy's, like, been spectacular through five games. He's been the story of the pitching staff just because he's the most unexpected.
Well, to answer the first portion of this question, the White Sox starting rotation is in the midst of a hell of a stretch of quality starts. They're looking great. I think it's just going to be a continuing thing. They're going to continue to look great. They're going to solidify themselves. They're going to meet the expectations that you had for them ahead of the season as one of the top starting rotations in baseball, along with the Dodgers, the Padres, the Yankees. So I think this is just going to continue for this staff. And to answer the second half of this question here, I agree with you guys. Carlos Rodon, if you are in the playoffs right now, Carlos Rodon is taking that ball and getting on the bump right now. You thought it would have been Giolito as the ace of the staff ahead of the season, and there's still going to be time for him to, you know, build on good starts and look great and be the ace that you know that he is. But if the playoffs started today, give that ball to Carlos Rodon. He's having a hell of a year. You love to see it after the guy has been struggling the way he has over the past few years. You love these comeback stories.
What kind of question is that?
Do you believe reports that Aaron Rodgers is as good as gone from Green Bay, from the Green Bay Packers? Do the Bears have the most enviable future at the position in the NFC North? If not the Bears, then which team?
You know, I got to tell you, it's maybe we need to tap the brakes slightly on the Beatlemania that's around the draft pick quarterback. I really liked Justin Fields coming out. I really liked his career. I watched a lot of Ohio State football, and I got to tell you, I'm delighted they got him with the 11th pick. It's extraordinary that he fell out of the top 10 when you really piece it together and look at all the players at that position. I got to tell you, the Green Bay, the Aaron Rodgers thing, I feel like it's like Russell Wilson. Don't tease me with this story unless it's really going to happen.
Right.
Like, I need this guy now to go away and not be a complete terror against the Bears. I think it's been fun to watch the way this thing has kind of unfolded, but enough. You know, stop talking about it and stop reporting stuff and let's get some action. If Rodgers is not with the Packers, the world is a better place to live in, right? If he's somewhere else, first of all, where's he going and how good is that team going to be? But the Packers are going to be damaged pretty severely without Aaron Rodgers, depending on what they could get in exchange for the player. But I can't imagine anybody as good as him. If you're looking at Aaron Rodgers, you're talking about the best quarterback in the league, other than Mahomes or with Mahomes in that role. So it would be great for the Bears. And yes, if he leaves, then they have a much more enviable position moving forward. And I like Justin Fields, as I said, a ton, but that's also a great unknown. You know, we got to get a little air and breathe a little bit and let the guy, let's see what he can do. Let's not judge him to be the best quarterback in the NFC North until we see him actually play.
You know, the other day I talked to Leroy Butler and Gary Ellison, a couple of former Green Bay Packers, and they said they feel that there's a 90% chance that Aaron Rodgers will be back in Green Bay.
Yep.
And I think that's the feeling that a lot of the Green Bay fans and the Green Bay alumni have, that they believe he'll be back. But when we were doing the draft show, it was such a distraction because I felt – I almost didn't care who the Bears drafted as long as Aaron Rodgers was not playing for Green Bay. And then the Bears would have a chance to come in here and compete for the division. But since all that has taken place and the conversation has never died down, we're hearing it from everybody but Aaron Rodgers. If he came out and he made a statement and he says, look, this is what I'm thinking. There is no way, shape, or form I will ever put on a Green Bay uniform again. I'm financially secure for generations in my lifetime. So the finances is not the final deciding factor here. It's about how do I feel about the organization I'm playing with and are they supporting me to get us to a Super Bowl, which I think he feels there's evidence that they haven't. Listen, man, I do. I think Aaron Rodgers is one of the top two or three players in the league. He's the best player in the division, and I kind of gave this question to Jeff. Okay, if Aaron Rodgers is the best player in the division, who's the second best player in the Bears division? You know, so we are kind of throwing names around. And, you know, hey, man, as a Bear, I hope he goes somewhere else. But I really do – I don't think that there's any way that they will let him – leave that organization, go play for another team. Maybe they'll force him to sit and see how comfortable he becomes in that role, because I think Aaron, he needs a little bit of that subtle spotlight. He's not going to put himself out there and make all these crazy claims, but he wants a little bit of that Jeopardy spotlight on him. And as a Bears fan, I hope he moves on, but honestly, I don't think he will.
You know, you're right, Tom. We have not heard directly from the mouth of Aaron Rodgers anything specific to him wanting to be out of Green Bay. We've heard of what he thinks of the general manager, the Jerry Krause comparisons and all of that. That we do know was a thing. I think, as we know, Aaron Rodgers seems like a very petty individual who can hold a grudge. Mm. I think he might be done. I think he might be forcing his hand out of there. We had Gary Ellerson on Friday, and he made the comment that he doesn't see Aaron Rodgers trying to sit for a year because he wouldn't want to hurt his Hall of Fame.
Yeah, his legacy is set.
Yeah. Right. I don't agree with that. I think he's very petty. I think the man would sit out for a season and would host Jeopardy and you know, try to find a more ideal team for him that's going to cater to what he wants, and I think he's in position to do that. I do anticipate and expect that he's done with Green Bay, so that's what I think, and I think the Bears do have the most enviable position in the NFC North. I am totally on Justin Fields mania, Mully. I will not temper my expectations. This Bears quarterback situation has been bad for so long. I'm excited. I'm all the way in.
That's a real question.
How many games do you anticipate Justin Fields starting in 2021? Can you put a number on it? Will he start in week one, before the halfway point, or as late as the last five games? What is the determining factor?
To me, the determining factor is how well Tevin Jenkins can play left tackle, because that's going to be a situation that you're going to have to recognize early, because they let Charles Leno Jr. go. And it's not really an easy transferable position, right tackle to the left tackle. You have to have certain traits that identify you as a left tackle, that identify you as a right tackle. So if they come out there and there's some susceptibility on the left side of pressure on no matter what the down and distance is, especially pass plays, I think I'm going to let Andy Dalton play as long as I can get that offensive line up to speed. They got all kinds of talent on the inside. They got Jermaine Ifedi that can play on the right side. But again, it's going to be about making sure that I have the right guys in place in front of him, because I don't want to turn Justin Fields into a avoidance quarterback where he's just not really running the design of the play. He's running away from anticipated pressure. And so I don't think you're really going to see the athleticism in which you drafted him for, if there is susceptibility over there. But again, if you come in here and you say, wow, this Tevin Jenkins, man, this dude can play. He's the Jimbo Cover of the new millennials. then I will think about putting Justin Fields in the lineup earlier. But again, a lot of my judgment of the quarterback rotation or when you get to play him is going to be evaluation of the offensive line.
Fascinating that's how you look at it, Tom. I heard Matt Nagy speak last week and talk about the idea that he's the guy that's going to make the decision, because it's going to be in season and it's his decision, and that he's going to do what's best for the player, not what's best for him, not what's best for Ryan Pace, because if you ruin the player, you ruin the Bears going forward. Yep. So I thought that was an interesting comment. I think with Tevin Jenkins, it worries me that they're seeing something that not everybody in the league sees. You know, he was drafted 39th, which indicates that not the entire league might not have believed that he could be a left tackle. But the Bears have seen it, and they believe it, and I'm hoping they're right. But I think that's a fascinating idea, that you want someone that has a little knowledge of the game and has dealt with that before, as opposed to kind of technically ruining your quarterback. I love that term, avoidance quarterback. I don't think you want him to have to play with one element that is a real danger to him. I think you want everything to kind of be functioning well when he gets an opportunity. So to answer the question, you know, I felt all along that he probably will play half the games, and by half I mean nine of the 17 right. games, so like a little more than half. I think they're going to start and see if they can go 4-4 or something before they pull the plug on that experiment. And I also think that there is a danger that a quarterback could go down if indeed you're tempting fate with a left tackle. I don't know that. I'm just saying that's in the back of my mind that maybe this is more injury related than it is performance related, and that scares me too.
Very well could be injury related, knowing the history of Andy Dalton, but I think we're going to see a very Trubisky-esque short leash on him, and I think we're going to see double-digit starts from Justin Fields. I think we could see as many as 13. Wow. I could very well see, guys, if Andy Dalton has a bad interception, a bad couple of interceptions, just a really rough game in the first month of the season, maybe the end of September, you know, him getting pulled for Fields and that being it for Dalton. I could very well see that. Mm. Just as similar as it was to last season, with the way they worked with Trubisky and Foles. So I'm going to go way over the top here and say 13 games before the halfway point, obviously, after the first month of the season. And the determining factor is going to be just one bad stretch in a game from Andy Dalton.
That is an unbelievably great question.
What is your take on Kentucky Derby winner Medina Spirit failing a post-race drug test and Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert subsequently suspended by Churchill Downs? Are you surprised by Baffert's indignation with this being his fifth horse to fail a drug test in a year?
You know, I'm a big horse racing fan, and I'm actually holding a ticket for Medina Spirit. That was our show pool. So we all chipped in $20, and the ticket is worth $456, I believe, and I've got to figure out a way of getting to the OTB and putting down the bet. I'm responsible for
that. I'll buy it from you right now for $200.
Oh, that's just that funny. Yeah, that, I've got to figure out how I'm going to invest the money in the next race, and that's next weekend. And we don't know if Medina Spirit's going to be running. We don't know how they're going to respond to it. We know that. Apparently, there will be no Triple Crown winner if he doesn't run, because Marauder, is that the name of the horse that was second in the Derby? He's not running in the Preakness. So I got to tell you, it's pretty bizarre to try to figure out what's going to happen with horse racing. Here's what I know. Bob Baffert, you know, I have a buddy who's got a shock of gray hair, and another friend of ours has nicknamed him Bob Baffert. Bob Baffert is as recognizable a trainer, as much a face of the horse racing industry as you're going to find out there, a Hall of Fame trainer. And to see him disgraced in this way, this is a disgrace. If this horse, he defended it by saying that that you're basically talking about a particle in a swimming pool, an Olympic-sized swimming pool with a particle in it, only instead of one, there's 14 particles. So what the steroid in question does is it helps a horse with inflammation and with pain, and it's legal. It's just got to be out of the horse's system by the time it runs. So apparently they didn't time it right. Now they took half a sample and they tested it, and it came up flagged. They will take the other half of the sample and test it, and we'll see what happens when it comes out. But this is Baffert and his people getting out in front of the story, because they haven't got all the information yet, but they see what's coming and they're trying to get in front of it. It's a disgrace. The Kentucky Derby had the second largest audience of any non-football sport during the pandemic. So this is a chance to come back for horse racing, and this is a blown opportunity if indeed this horse has been tested positive. Yeah.
You know, I feel worse for the horse than I do for Bob Baffert, because they understood what they were injecting into the horse. The horse had no say about it. So them to have an ill-timed way it gets out of your system, it's their fault. It's the trainer. It's the whole staff's fault of what they did to the horse. And listen, before they outlawed steroids in the NFL, I mean, that was kind of the case, that guys that used them in the offseason, they used to use them in the offseason, and then they would let them filter out of their system. So when they went to the mandatory NFL drug test, it would be out of their system by then. So, you know, these guys did a bad job in if it is a legal substance or whatever you'd call it, a legal steroid they can use to, you know, help the inflammation and stuff, then – hey, everybody's probably using it. They probably just did a better timing. But when you have a race of this magnitude and you jeopardize your success by not being able to determine that this would be out of the system. Yeah, I know there's only one drop per Olympic swimming pool. However, it's because it was getting out of your system in the time that you put it in him to get it, you know, to get him ready for the race. So I don't care. I don't feel bad about Bob Baffert. I feel bad for this horse because that's everything they trained this guy for. And he went out there and did what was asked of him. Unfortunately, the training and the staff didn't do a good job of getting it out of his system before he was tested.
Mandaloon is the name of the horse that would that finished second, that would be the champion if this horse is taken down, which hasn't happened since 1968. It's only happened once in the Kentucky Derby, and it's been that long.
Yeah, it's a shame. I agree with you, Tom. You feel terrible for the horse. You feel terrible for the others involved in the Derby who did things by the book, who did things the right way. It's just a shame. Particularly when you look at the end of that Derby race and it's the seventh win, Bob Baffert stands alone, was in the final call of the Derby race, is having seven wins in the Kentucky Derby. It's just a real shame. I'm not surprised, however, by the indignation by Baffert, because this is the typical thing you hear from guys who are caught when they use performance enhancing drugs in any sport. So not surprised by the indignation, but it is a damn shame.
Yeah, it's bad for the sport. I mean, there's no way around it. It's really rough for horse racing, and it's already kind of a dying sport. And there are no YouTubers that are going to race to try to save it having in boxing.
Have they already tested the samples of the horse that came into second place so they know that we wouldn't have to revisit the same scenario in case that if they did pull it from Medina Spirit, that it, you know, the next horse all of a sudden would have to be tested? Do they know that he's in the clear?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe that every horse is tested and there's only been one positive, and that's Medina Spirit, which, again, you know, as they were loading that horse into the gate, you heard Randy Moss say that horse has never been passed. If he can get a lead, he's never been passed in any race in his life. So I feel bad for Medina Spirit too. I'm glad that all tickets count, that they're not taking the horse down. So I don't know what you do with other tickets, but that's a good thing, because I'm sitting on that on that race for the Preakness, and I'm actually starting to look up the now. I thought maybe that horse would be the favorite in the Preakness. It would have been, but now what if they don't let him in? Who do I wager on? All right, 312-644-6767. We're going to take advantage of Tom's presence, talk Bears football. We'll do that next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.